You are listening to Podcasters of Horror, a podcast about exploring horror anthologies from film and TV, as part of the Super Network, with your hosts, Super Marcy.
And he just gave off, like, very creepy vibes, so you're always very unsure of this guy.
And the terrible Australian, Beat Germine.
Which, in that version, it's a Krusty the Clown doll that's harassing Homer.
This podcast may contain coarse language.
It just kept getting weirder and weirder, and it's, what the f*** is up with this house?
Adult themes.
You know, she's only just a little girl, but he really is very mean to her.
And potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. For more information, please visit supermarcy.com or see the show notes. To show your support, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Please enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Podcasters of Horror, the horror anthology podcast. I am one of your hosts, Super Marcy, and of course, I am joined by my regular co-host, Mr. Beej Jamine. Hello, Beej. Welcome back.
G'day, Marcy. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I'm very excited that we're going back into the Twilight Zone once again, but I think our pairing for this episode of the show is quite an interesting one because it's not just two random episodes that we picked or ones that are kind of linked in a small way. What's interesting, though, is one is from the original incarnation, which is considered a classic of the series, but also an episode from the 2000s version of the show that happens to be an actual sequel to that episode.
Yes, so we are going into not one, but two different Twilight Zones.
You're traveling through another dimension.
A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind.
A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
You're entering the Twilight Zone.
And yes, so we are discussing an episode from the original series and the sequel from the 2000s show with It's a Good Life and It's Still a Good Life. And I believe this may be one of the only cases of a sequel. There is apparently kind of a spiritual successor to Serve Man in the 2021 series, which I'm sure we will get to. But I believe this may have been the first actual sequel to an original episode.
Indeed. And honestly, like the way the first episode ends, I mean, we'll get into it shortly, but he kind of leaves you wanting more. So I'm very glad over 30 odd years later or 40 years later, someone who was organizing the 2000s revival was like, you know what we should do? Let's make a sequel to an episode that is considered a classic of the original incarnation of the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. And we will get to both of those. And let's get straight to discussing these two episodes. First up, it's A Good Life.
That dog, that collie dog, he doesn't like me. He's a bad dog.
Anthony. Did you do something to Bill Salm's dog? Did you, son?
I put him in the cornfield.
This is episode 73 from the original series at season 3, episode 8. It was written by Rod Serling, based on It's a Good Life by Jerome Bixby, and it was directed by James Sheldon. It stars John Larch, Cloris Leachman, Billy Mumy, Don Kiefer, and Alice Frost. And this episode is actually parodied in an early Treehouse of Horror episode. And I actually did not realize for the longest time that was based on a Twilight Zone episode. So that kind of gave me an idea of what to expect. The plot synopsis. On an isolated family farm in Peeksville, Ohio, young Anthony Fremont, who has vast mental powers but lacks emotional development, holds his terrified family and neighbors in thrall to his every juvenile wish. And the opening narration for this one is a little lengthy, so I will try to get through this as quick as possible. Here we go. Tonight's story on the Twilight Zone is somewhat unique and calls for a different kind of introduction. This, as you may recognize, is a map of the United States. And there's a little town there called Peeksville. On a given morning, not too long ago, the rest of the world disappeared and Peeksville was left all alone. Its inhabitants were never sure whether the world was destroyed and only Peeksville left untouched, or whether the village had somehow been taken away. They were, on the other hand, sure of one thing, the cause. A monster had arrived in the village. Just by using his mind, he took away the automobiles, the electricity, the machines, because they displeased him. And he moved an entire community back into the Dark Ages, just by using his mind. Now, I'd like to introduce you to some of the people of Peeksville, Ohio. This is Mr. Fremont. It's in his farmhouse that the monster resides. This is Mrs. Fremont, and this is Aunt Amy, who probably had more control over the monster in the beginning than almost anyone. But one day she forgot. She began to sing aloud. Now the monster doesn't like singing, so his mind snapped at her and turned her into his smiling, vacant thing you're looking at now. She sings no more. And you'll note that the people in Peeksville, Ohio have to smile. They have to think happy thoughts and say happy things. Because once displeased, the monster can wish them into a cornfield or change them into a grotesque walking horror. This particular monster can read minds, you see. He knows every thought. He can feel every emotion. Oh, yes, I did forget something, didn't I? I forgot to introduce you to the monster. This is the monster. His name is Anthony Fremont. He's 6 years old with a cute little boy face and blue guileless eyes. But when those eyes look at you, you better start thinking happy thoughts, because the mind behind them is absolutely in charge. This is the Twilight Zone.
Just to add it in there, Marcy, I really had to say this while you were reading that. Quite a twister, but you didn't see that coming. Which was using the Bart's Nightmare episode of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, because like you, I was very much aware of that episode. But I think I always knew it was based on a Twilight Zone episode, especially with the opening narration, because that segment had. So sitting down to watch this episode, I was very much looking forward to it and to see like how this episode, I would say, compares to The Simpsons, but see how much a classic this episode is considered, because I know a lot of people consider this one of the best Twilight Zone episodes ever. So yeah, I think it's great that we're actually finally doing this episode for the show.
And not only are we covering this episode, the fact that this one has a sequel made 40 years later is very intriguing. So give us your thoughts on It's a Good Life. And it's a real good thing that you're smiling, Bede. Real good.
Yes, it's really good. I'm smiling right now and only going to say really good thoughts and opinions on this movie.
Real good, real good. It's a good thing.
It is a good thing. I will admit, anytime characters started saying that, I was thinking back to The Simpsons. Because it's a bit hard not to. But I'll say this though, Marcy. Like, I knew exactly what this story was going to be when I started watching it. And I think what's interesting about this episode, because a lot of the times with Twilight Zone episodes, they always end with a twist. And I find it interesting that this episode actually, the twist happens at the beginning when you find out that the monster that Rod Serling is talking about is this 6-year-old boy. And you just think to yourself, oh, really? And you think, maybe this is an exaggeration, but I got to admit, Marcy, sitting down and watching this episode, I was on edge the entire time while watching this episode. I don't know what it is. Like, I literally was fearful for all these people because from both the script and the direction from James Selden, it just really made this whole scenario such a really intense experience because you really feel for these characters who basically 24/7 have to think happy thoughts and do things that please young Anthony because they know, like, at any given moment, he could just literally zap them out of reality. And these people can't do anything, and they're pretty much at the whim of this 6-year-old boy. And it's a really fantastic episode, and I am not surprised, like, this episode is considered one of the series' best. It is an exceptionally made episode that, even though it doesn't end, I guess, on a happy note, I would say, Marcy, it's a perfect episode of The Twilight.
I absolutely loved this episode. And as you mentioned, the twist is in that opening narration. I forgot to introduce you to the monster. Oh, there he is. It's the 6-year-old boy. And you're like, oh, well, he's possibly made everywhere but this town exist. Like, how can a kid do this? And you find out very quickly exactly how he can do this because, as he says in the narration, he can hear every thought. If he doesn't like something, he will just zap it out of existence or do something nasty. It's one of the most intense episodes I have seen of The Twilight Zone. It may be one of the most intense pieces of TV that I've seen because you know that if somebody just thinks something wrong for even a second, little Anthony is going to do something bad. And then it makes you think, if I was in that situation, how would I handle it? I am sure that I would have been like the first person Anthony zapped to the cornfield. As we find out, if he doesn't like somebody, he puts them in the cornfield, but he does this with animals and people, or he can change them into something. And we get this sort of introduction to Anthony where he's like making a 3-headed gopher or some kind of animal. And it's kind of horrific. And everyone around him just acts so unnatural. They know it's not right, but they have to. And you get the sense that everyone that's left blames the parents for birthing Anthony. But you feel like, why them? Why was it them that had this kid? Why does he have these powers? Like, they are conflicted with this as well. And the scenes are just incredibly intense. As one of the characters is really losing his mind on, I believe it's his birthday, that he is melting down and Anthony is not happy. And he does get turned into a jack-in-the-box, which is, again, very iconic from that Simpsons Treehouse of Horror. But it's very unsettling to see it here as well. I absolutely understand and agree with this being one of the best-known episodes and considered one of the best episodes because I think it really is. There is no fault I can find in this episode because it's just so well done. And we haven't even discussed, like, how it's shot, and it's shot in an interesting way. But again, the performances, bar none, just fantastic. Like, I believe Billy Mumy. I believe him that he would just wipe out most of the world just because he doesn't like things. And all those around are just also fantastic. And I was blown away because I had no idea Cloris Leachman was in the original series. But here she is as the mum of Anthony, and she is in the sequel that we will discuss soon too.
Indeed. And I think that's also another thing too, because that sort of sense of tension throughout, because at this birthday party, you know something bad is going to happen, but you don't know who it's going to happen to. And I think that's one of the things that just sort of makes it such an interesting episode. I mean, obviously, the birthday boy himself, Dan, played by Don Kiefer, is the one who gets zapped to the cornfield by Anthony. But even then, before it kind of reveals that it is obviously him, you have all these other characters who are trying their best to please Anthony, like the guy who's playing the piano and he doesn't want to play a song that's going to annoy Anthony. And then, of course, you have Aunt Amy, who, since her mind's a bit warped and she pretty much says whatever's on her mind, you could think like, oh no, she could get zapped out too if Anthony hears her. And then you have Cloris Leachman's character of Mrs. Fremont going up to her. It's like, but it's good that Anthony's doing all this. It's really, really good. So yeah, it's really just like an excellent example of just creating tension in such a, I guess, in a very claustrophobic setting, as just in a lounge room of a house.
Yeah, I mean, you get the idea that there's not much of Peaksville left, so everyone's kind of confined to just sort of a small space. But I feel like I knew that Don Kiefer was going to crack and that Anthony would do something to him. But it's that meltdown that is so effective, because the cracks are showing. They're showing with everybody. And when they're sort of turning to each other, but it's real good he did that. It's real good. You did real good, Anthony. It's like, this is so messed up. It's one of the most messed up things. And I don't want to make comment that there are certain things happening in the world that have happened in the world that this absolutely reflects. But it definitely does. It's this ultimate, like, you do not have a choice, or you ain't going to exist, or you're going to be turned into a jack-in-the-box. And it's all just perpetrated by a child. And I think a lot of things like that are perpetrated by people who probably haven't actually grown up and cracked tantrums like children. But it kind of is the ultimate tantrum from a child, but in the most horrific way possible. And I just thought this was a mind-blowing episode. It really was. I was just really impressed with just how everything kind of pans out with the episode.
And also having that sort of open-ended ending as well. Usually when something like an episode of a TV show or a movie does that, it can be very annoying because it feels like, oh, there's no resolution. But I think it works in this instance because the characters still have to deal with this nightmare forever. And even if there was never a sequel episode to this one, you could just imagine, like, that story is just going to go on forever and ever. And they're going to basically live in fear of this child until he dies. And I think also, too, like, there are moments throughout the episode, and even though Dan keeps saying somebody just bash his head in, like, when he's not looking. And you can see at moments, even before those cracks of his start to come out, like, you could see the opportunity where characters could do something in that moment, but they're too terrified to do anything.
They're absolutely too terrified because Anthony knows what you're thinking. He knows what's on your mind. It doesn't matter if you're conscious of it. He will know. And that's what sort of makes him one of the most terrifying beings. The character of Anthony almost feels like he's out of a Stephen King property, and I wonder if this had any impact on Stephen King or whether the original story did, because you kind of feel like, again, with the child characters of Stephen King having these abilities and what happens, Anthony just shows to be selfish and he just wants what he wants.
Oh yeah, and kind of just looking up a bit more on the actual original story itself, like, I think even though the episode still goes by the original short story title, It's a Good Life, but I think when you look at the actual title of the short story, The Good is kind of, I would say, in brackets, but it's almost in italic compared to the other parts of the title. So it's almost like, it's a good life.
Yeah, it's a real good life. I'm smiling and I want to be. Yes, real good you did that. Yep.
And also, the fact that in the original short story, Anthony is actually 3 years old. So that kind of also makes sense, like why he would behave as he is as well. But even six-year-olds can even behave like this.
I think it almost makes more sense for him to be six because he's more aware of the world around him, I think.
Yeah.
Rather than three. So imagine a three-year-old would just be making like real-life characters of like, I'm so dated, like Barney and whoever the kids are into, Bluey.
Definitely. But even then, though, like, I think what I like, it just even looking at other interesting things about it, like, of course, like, this segment was remade for the movie version of Twilight Zone by Joe Dante as well. And also, what I find interesting too, just like looking more information up on it, Rod Serling actually thought about making a new version of the story, but as a feature, which I can definitely see the potential for sure, but it never happened because he passed away before it even happened. But I think you could easily take the story and expand it into a feature. Like, there's definitely a lot of potential there. But I think even the 25 minutes that was made for the Twilight Zone, I think is still perfect regardless.
Yeah, I think this is a case of a story that could be a feature, but I think you could actually combine these two episodes, like the stories within them, as a feature. And we'll get to the sequel momentarily. And with that said, final thoughts and rating out of 5. Beat!
Oh, Marcy, this is definitely a 5 out of 5 episode, for sure. Like, I just think it's just perfect from start to finish. It definitely has one of the scariest villains that we have seen from any incarnation of the Twilight Zone. And the fact that it is just a six-year-old boy is what makes it even more terrifying. And I think Billy Mumy actually does a great job in the role because it just is the most intense episode I think we've ever covered from the original incarnation. It really is just such a great bit of tension throughout.
Yeah, I agree. It gets 5 out of 5. And if I had the powers of Anthony, I think people would be more terrified because never give me power. It's not going to end well. But seriously, it is like an incredible episode. And yeah, Billy Mumy, he just nailed that performance. He's utterly terrifying. And pretty soon we'll find out what happened to Anthony. But here is our closing narration for the episode. No comment here. No comment at all. We only wanted to introduce you to one of our very special citizens, little Anthony Fremont, age 6, who lives in a village called Peaksville, in a place that used to be Ohio. And if by some strange chance you should run across him, you had best think only good thoughts. Anything less than that is handled at your own risk, because if you do meet Anthony, you can be sure of one thing. You have entered the Twilight Zone. And on to the sequel. It's still a good life.
It's a nice day, isn't it?
Oh, it's a real nice day.
Yeah. Well, let's go, son. Mom's waiting.
Tell me something, George. What kind of a boy pushes a little girl out of a tree? Did you do that, son?
It was an accident.
Well, it had to be. Timmy's a good boy. Agnes, I told you this wasn't a good idea.
Told her what, George?
It was nothing, Anthony. It was nothing.
This is episode 30 from The Twilight Zone from 2002 to 2003. This was written by Ira Stephen Burr and, of course, based on characters created by Jerome Bixby from the episode by Rod Serling. And it was directed by Alan Croker. It stars Cloris Leachman, Bill Mumy, and Liliana Mumy with Forrest Whitaker as the host. Plot summary. 40 years later, godlike Anthony Fremont is still holding Peaksville, Ohio, under a reign of terror. However, things are about to change when his daughter turns out to have similar powers. Now, our opening narration, and I am not going to sound anything like Forrest Whitaker. I do quite like him as voice. 40 years ago, Rod Serling introduced us to a monster. A monster so powerful he was able to make the world disappear just by using his mind. For the residents of Peeksville, Ohio, the nightmare had begun. The monster knew their every thought, he could feel their every emotion, and when they made him angry, which was often, he would banish them into a cornfield from which there was no return. And the most frightening thing about this monster was that he was only 6 years old. Now it's 40 years later, and the people of Peeksville are still in hell. Oh yes, there's one other thing. The monster now has a child of his own, and though she possesses none of her father's powers, he still loves her very, very much. Well, as it says in the plot synopsis, she does have similar powers. And yeah, so on to the sequel, which Billy became Bill. No longer 6 years old, he goes by Bill.
Exactly.
First, I have to say, I love the fact that this episode actually has the return of the actors who played the characters, with Cloris Leachman as Mrs. Fremont and, of course, Bill Mumy as Anthony. And the daughter of Anthony is played by his real-life daughter, Liliana. So it's a very cool sort of casting and how they approached this sequel. Bede, what are your thoughts on It's Still a Good Life?
I'm smiling as I'm talking about this and thinking more happy thoughts. Well, again, I was very curious to see how this sequel would work as a follow-up to It's a Good Life. And after watching that episode, I was like, I need to watch the sequel right away, which I did. And I think it's actually a fantastic follow-up. I think it does a great job with continuing the tone and feel of the original episode, but giving it a bit more expansion. So it's a bit more outside of the Fremont's home. So we get more of sort of what the town is like as well, and how the townspeople are just in utter fear of Anthony. And I really love the fact that Bill Mumy's real-life daughter, Liliana, plays his daughter in the episode, because you kind of get that sort of opening, like, archival footage of the original episode, and then they do a close-up of Bill Mumy's face as a child, but then it transitions to Liliana's face, and it's like, oh, that is totally Bill Mumy's daughter. They have very similar facial features. Like, it is kind of just mind-boggling. And I love the fact that Billy Mumy and Cloris Leachman are in this episode. I think they're both great. And now Anthony is now older. He's very much more aware of the powers that he has and how threatening of a person he can be. Even like in the opening, when his daughter accidentally hurts herself with a friend and you're not sure what's going to happen. Like, is Anthony going to kill his daughter's friend, or is it going to be his friend's father who comes along? And I mean, obviously it ends up being the friend's father, but yeah, it's just like really just as intense as the first episode, but in a different way. And it even escalates from there, because even before he sends his daughter's friend out into the cornfield, he lights the friend's father on fire. So it's like, oh geez, this is escalated quickly. And you feel even more terrified for the characters in this episode. But then when you find out that Audrey has the same powers as well, you're like Mrs. Fremont and the other people in town. It's like, oh, finally we have some kind of hope of fighting back against Anthony. And we kind of see very quickly, as she's kind of training herself, her powers may even be greater than her father's as well. And where it goes in the third act, which we will spoil, but we'll do that after your thoughts on the episode. It just goes in a really fantastic direction in the third act, which makes it even more of a fantastic episode.
Yeah, it really pulls the rug from under you with the third act. But yeah, this is a fantastic follow-up, and it does have the tone, and it still has that claustrophobic feel, even though we have opened up sort of more into the town. It's just the fact that they're all under whatever Anthony wants. Like you said, it literally opens where he sets the kid's dad on fire before sending him to the cornfield. So he's very much more aware of his power and what he can do. And a lot of the suspense in the episode, besides having to deal with Anthony, is the fact that Cloris Leachman finds out that Audrey does have powers and they are a bit different than her father's. And for a very silly reason, I'm going to say, she blabs to somebody about it, which Anthony will find out. Why would you do that? It's kind of endangers everybody. And that person, of course, then tells more people. So then it becomes obvious when they go to a bowling night that everybody's looking at Audrey. And soon enough, Anthony knows what's going on. And I just think it's all done really, really well. Bill Mumy is fantastic. I think he just went straight back into that character that he hadn't played for 40 years and absolutely nailed it. And it's Cloris Leachman. She was great in the original episode. She's great in the sequel. We get more of a, as you mentioned, like dynamics into the mother-son relationship as well. And I think Liliana Mumy is fantastic as well. And you can see the resemblance. And I think the chemistry for them is very much there as father and daughter. And from what Audrey says, is she hates her father because she can't do or have anything. But deep down, she does love her father. And this episode culminates in the third act, which takes place, it's like a town hall kind of.
I'm gonna say, yeah, kind of, yeah, because he does mention like he's gonna have a town meeting.
That's right. So it's gonna culminate there, and where it goes, it's not what you think. Everything sets up. So we know Audrey has powers. She's not a fan of her father. She loves her grandmother. That's all gonna be pulled out from under you with what happens because Bede.
Well, essentially, like, pretty much Cloris Leachman's character just has had it. She just finally unleashes everything.
She's cracked after all this time, hasn't she?
Oh, yeah. And she really lays it into Anthony, says over and over again, I wish if I had the chance, I would have killed you a long time ago. I should have bashed your head in with a rock, or if I knew this was going to happen. And she also feels the amount of guilt about the whole thing as well, like a mixture of both bringing Anthony into the world, but also her and her husband never having the opportunity to stop it. And so she finally cracks, which really upsets Audrey. And then when Mrs. Fremont tells her to do it, Audrey, zap your father away, she says basically, no, I love my daddy. And then she zaps Mrs. Fremont away, and then zaps everyone else in the town to the cornfield.
Now, let me tell you, when all this happened, I was not expecting this, and I was just shook.
I mean, I was shook as well, and what makes the scene even better is Anthony's reaction. He's like, Audrey, what did you do?
Yeah, he's shocked. He's like, what the... Even he didn't expect that, even knowing, like, she has powers. And we find out, like, her powers, she can wish things away, but she can also bring things back.
Yes.
Because there is a nice moment where she brings back a watch for Mrs. Fremont that she wasn't allowed to have because Anthony didn't like it.
And it kind of also shows, like, oh, I mean, not only does she have powers, but she is able to bring things back. So if she has the opportunity to get rid of her father, she can bring back everyone who disappeared into the cornfield, Mrs. Fremont's husband and even just the world outside their town. Like, she can bring it all back if she wants to.
So she has greater powers than he does. And what she does with it, she just gets rid of everybody. So it's just her and her dad. But we get another bit of a twist in this episode.
We do. And I think it's basically like some time later. So it's just only Anthony and Audrey just being with themselves. And even Audrey notices her dad looks down and even asks him, like, what is up? And he says, like, oh, it's great with spending time together, but I do feel lonely. So in a moment like that, Anthony kind of realizes, like, you know, by now that there's no one around, I'm basically, what's the point of having any of these powers? Especially when you have a daughter who also has the same powers as well, who could zap you out of existence. I think if the episode kind of ended it there with the kind of lingering threat, like, now he is in the kind of same position as everyone else was in that town, I think that would have been a perfect way to end it. But it ends in a different way, where Audrey, kind of seeing how sad her dad is, she decides to bring everything back. I mean, not the townspeople just yet, but everything else around the town. Because again, like it sort of establishes earlier, since even though she loves her father, there's a lot of things about the outside world that she wants to see. But of course, her father took it all away, like wanting to go to New York or go overseas or meet other people. So she decides to bring that all back, which it essentially makes Anthony happy. So they could spend time together, but in a way, they don't have to just terrorize a small town. They could actually go around the world and explore it.
But it feels like they're going to go around the world and just terrorize everybody.
Yeah, because exactly.
Because it sort of leaves you with that feeling. It's like, I don't know, like, what's more horrific?
I mean, it is. And even he, after all this time, because he just didn't like any of this stuff as a kid, even he thinks to himself, like, you know what? I would like to see New York. Like, so he kind of accepts that. And so he and his daughter decide to head out into the world and see it for themselves. So, I mean, that ending also works as well, because, again, it lets that sort of lingering threat continue. Although a part of me wishes now, because I know the Jordan Peele Twilight Zone series only had two seasons, a part of me wishes, like, every incarnation of this show should have a sequel to It's a Good Life, because I would love to see what both Anthony and Audrey are doing today. Because I know Liliana Moomi is still acting, but mainly as a voice actor. And Bill Moomi still is as well. So, I mean, they could have made a third entry into this saga. But even then, though, if the episode kind of ended in the way that I thought it was going to end, I think that would have also been a perfect ending as well.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a twist upon a twist almost, because you're not expecting what actually happens. And I think that's really clever, because it really, like, throws you for a loop. I mean, I would like to see what else would have happened. But then you got to run the risk of, is it going to be as good as these two? And with that said, let's do final thoughts and rating. Bede.
Yeah, this one's also a 5 out of 5. See, I'm going to put both It's a Good Life and It's Still a Good Life as one of the best duologies ever.
Yeah, I agree. I give it 5 out of 5 because I think, like, this is just a perfect follow-up. It just does everything really well, and it keeps everything from that original episode while still doing its own thing. The fact that we get the actors back in those roles, I think, is kind of the icing on the cake, because it really makes it a perfect kind of follow-up for something. And the closing narration. No lesson to be learned here. No morals to be taught. Just an update from Peeksville, Ohio, where Anthony and Audrey Fremont want you to think happy thoughts, and you better do as you're told. Otherwise, you might wind up in that cornfield known as the Twilight Zone. And that was our discussion on It's a Good Life and It's Still a Good Life. Remember to keep smiling, and it's a real good thing, all right? And now, because it's a real good thing, you should check out supermarcy.com, the home of podcasters of horror and all the other podcasts on the Super Network. So be sure to check those all out. Podcasters of Horror can be found on all your podcast streaming players. So be sure you're subscribed so you get updated on new episodes and give us a review if you like as well. And if you want to find me, I am Super Marcy on the social media and I'm Super_Marcy on the Letterboxd and Bead.
Well, if people want to find me out there on the internet, you can follow me on Twitter, Blue Sky and Letterboxd under Bead Jemide. You can also find all my work and as well as all the other awesome podcasts that you and I host together, Marcy, on supermarcy.com and as well as on all podcast streamers everywhere via the Super Network podcast feed. And you can also listen to my solo show, Bead vs. the Living Dead, and as well as its other shows that are under the Bead vs. Living Dead network on all podcast streamers everywhere, either via their solo podcast feeds or as part of the Bead vs. the Living Dead podcast feed.
Excellent. And the next time we will be going into the Twilight Zone on an upcoming episode of Podcasters of Horror, you can expect us to still be in the 2000s era Twilight Zone. So until then, be wary of any children that might have powers that can set you on fire and make you a jack-in-the-box.
Exactly, exactly.
Thanks for listening. See you next time.
You're traveling through another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of imagination. Your next stop, the Twilight Zone.
You're traveling to another dimension. A dimension not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are only that